I believe in honesty from the start, and above all, in not making a big deal out of it. I mean, there is nothing wrong, shameful, or strange about being a National Socialist. It is completely normal. It is the most natural thing in the world. Let it appear exactly that way.
Hello and welcome back to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement. My name is Fredrik Weidland, and with me, as always, the leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement, Simon Lindberg. Greetings.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing?
I am just fine, thanks. You as well?
Yeah, I'm fine. And we are 1 week late, and for that we apologize. This is due to internet problems, which disrupted our preparations. But now we're back in business again. So,
and it is episode 27. I think you did forget to say that, so I just remind. So everyone knows we are up for Leadership Perspective episode 27.
Yeah. And well, as listener of Leadership Perspective, you probably already know that we have an English language website, which you can find at nordicresistancemovement.org. This page, we publish articles about activism, ideology, bigger meetings, and other things related to what we do as an organization. But we also have other sites in our own languages, including news sites such as the Swedish news site Nordfront, whose articles are not translated to nordicresistancemovement.org because our site does not publish ordinary news. But I would like to highlight one of these articles from Nordfront, which is very readable, and also I would like to link to the Swedish article so you can read it with a translation program if you wish. The article is a report on the media's psychological warfare against the population, and it maps and analyzes the Swedish media's propaganda during the Russia-Ukraine war, which is a propaganda so crazy it's ridiculous. Regardless of which side you're on, if any, I think most people can agree that the propaganda surrounding this war is unparalleled. But Swedish media take it a step further. The report author, his name is Marcus Hansson, did is that he mapped the front pages from the two largest newspapers in Sweden, Aftonbladet and Expressen, during the election times for the Swedish election year 2022, to see how much of the front pages were actually about the election and how much which was about other things. And what this report shows, firstly, is that of the 303 front pages mapped, one for each day during this election period, almost nothing is about the election. Instead, almost everything is about Russia, or to be more precise, about Putin. In Expressen, Russian President Vladimir Putin is mentioned 297 times, and in Aftonbladet, 281 times. out of 303 during the Swedish election.
And this is also only, as you said, the name Putin or the picture of Putin. So he has not counted when there is something about, for example, Russia. It's only Putin he has counted.
Yes. And it's totally deliberate to use the word Putin instead of Russia all the time. So the word Putin is mentioned 3 times a day in both newspapers. So even the few times they actually had something else in the front pages, for example, the Swedish election, the rest of the content is bombarded with Putin. Everything that happens in Russia is also linked to Putin. And the author of this report, Marcus Hansson, believes that this portrayal of him as an all-powerful, godlike person becomes absurd and contradicted, because many of the articles are about being seriously ill, both physically and mentally, and therefore indirectly and unable to rule. Aftonbladet wrote an article that people in the Kremlin are dissatisfied with Putin, angle that he is no longer in control, to write a headline the next day about the Russian elite standing behind him, which is not interpreted as him being in control, but that they are afraid to go against him. The report also shows that the most common headlines was to highlight Putin's war plans. This could be alleged war plans for Ukraine or against Western nations, including plans against our neighboring countries, the Baltic states and Finland, but also against Sweden. To give the listeners some perspective, one of these front pages is about Putin's horror plan against Sweden. And another is Putin's new threat, wipe out countries. It may also be worth mentioning that the experts highlighted and interviewed are always extreme NATO supporters and or employees of the Public Authority for Psychological Defense, which is an authority whose task is psychological warfare, or member of military intelligence, but that they are presented as objective experts. Anyway, I hope you take the time to actually translate and read the article in full, but to summarize it, two biggest newspaper write an average of 289 times out of 303 about Putin during an election year in Sweden. And the headlines are often false, highly deceptive, or ludicrous. I read a lot of non-Swedish articles, and I must say that only the British media comes close to this. So my point in bringing all of this up, firstly, is to show that the psychological warfare against our people is enormous. It has proven massive, and it still is, when it comes to immigration for several years. It was massive during COVID, and now it has taken the next step. There is no doubt that the mainstream media is at war with the population. And we also don't have to think about who has the power in the West. It is the mainstream media and those who own it. As a footnote, it could be mentioned that one of these two newspapers is owned by a Norwegian foundation, which in turn is largely owned by Jewish banks and investment companies from the USA and BlackRock. And the other newspaper is owned by the Jewish Bonnier family. What this report also shows is that these media during the Swedish election year constituted influence operation on the Swedish election process. They have forced several parties, including the Sweden Democrats, but also the Social Democrats, to become pro-NATO, while also preventing people from accessing the information they need to make their choice during the Swedish election. This psychological warfare against the people, but also against the political parties, has also caused us, as Swedes, to apply for entry into the war alliance of NATO. There has been no debate about NATO at all. And who would have dared to go against the media's narrative? So, that's what I want to say. I think this report is so well done and revealing that it should be spread. Our enemy is the mainstream media and the forces that control it, because there we find those who rule the world.
The owners of the media and the banks are definitely our enemies.
Yeah.
But I agree, it was a very good report. And also, once again, I must just mention that this has nothing to do with if you support Ukraine or Russia, or you don't take any side at all. It's interesting anyway, as you have also explained, but I just want to highlight that once again.
And I don't think that Marcus Hansen is a follower of Vladimir Putin.
No, I don't think so either. So, but also, this is of course something that, even though I did not follow it up so closely as Marcus Hansson did, I also have recognized this when I've been in the stores and looked at the headlines of the different papers and so on. Because, of course, media in Sweden has always been one-sided throughout history. They have been pro-pride, they have been pro-open borders, they have been against nationalists and national socialists and so on. But then during COVID-19, something really happened. During COVID-19, they really took the prize. I have never, ever seen so much propaganda during a short time as it was in COVID-19. Then almost all headlines was about COVID-19. All every day, just all papers every day. It was taken to a whole new level, the propaganda war against the people. But then I haven't seen nothing yet, because then the war broke out and then it got to even another level. It has been even more extreme than it was during COVID. So yeah, it's pure chutzpah these days. They don't feel ashamed at all. They just go total media war, total propaganda, total brainwashing war. They have, you know, been holding back a little bit in the past, maybe played some role play that they have slightly different opinions or whatever. But now, first during COVID-19, and now even more during Putin, they've really gone all in.
Yeah. And we are the worst. I think British media, from Daily Mail, but also The Sun and those papers, they are really bad. But we are the worst, and we are much worse than American media, actually. And they are not good either.
And sadly, and the black pill is that big parts of the Swedish population, they buy it, I think. They fall for these tricks. But hopefully, at least the ones that do not fall, and this is the white pill, they get more radicalized. They see this shit and want to fight against
it. Yeah, I hope so too. And we see in Sweden, the system critique is quite big, actually. We have this the system is big, of course, and but the ones that they censor, they are also big, the alternative media and alternative structures.
But it polarizes. The big stupid sheep masses, they believe in every word and they get brainwashed. But the dissidents, they hopefully get even more radical and even more eager to fight back.
Yeah. Yes. Moving on from this.
Yes.
Yes, and then we move on to what has been going on in the struggle since the last episode. And then we talk about the beginning of March until now, when we record in the middle of May.
What have we been doing against the bankers and media owners during this period? Yes, there has been a stable level of 200 to 250 activities around the Nordic countries, with some extra focus on physical training compared to usual. And that's not a coincidence. I ended the report last episode by saying that our organization days had taken place when the episode was released, but not yet when we were recording. So we were recording right before. So of course it makes a lot of sense to pick up there in this episode. Our organization days took place in the middle parts of Sweden under the theme A Stronger Force. Members from Sweden, Norway, and Denmark gathered for socializing, lectures, and workshops on this team, A Stronger Force. A lot of the weekend's arrangement ended up on the most literal interpretation of the theme, strength through physical training. For example, basic martial art techniques were fought, how to execute a perfect deadlift, and how to train the best way possible without any equipment. The big highlight for most of the participants, however, was the Resistance Movement's annual boxing tournament, which this time was won by the longtime activists Martin Saxlind in heavyweight and by Marcus Hansson, the author of the article you talked about in your introduction in lightweight.
Intellectual and a warrior.
The pen and the sword, yes.
Yeah.
All in all, I would say that Organization Days was a fantastic weekend that in many ways set the bar high for the members' physical health by also clarifying some new directives regarding health and exercise. So we also put out some goals on how we will grow as an organization when it comes to physical training and so on. In addition to a lot of training during the period, we also have carried out several more or less extensive wilderness activities during the period. The most outstanding of which was a ski trip in Luleå in northern Sweden, where the participants built snow caves that they spent the night in. And this was when it was around minus 35 degrees Celsius outside, so it was extremely cold and they slept in these igloos almost. The biggest propaganda activity during the period was when we traditionally paid tribute to the Nordic worker on May the 1st. We did it this year in several different ways around the Nordic region. In the city of Sundsvall, we had a pre-announced square meeting with several speakers, where a lot of outsiders also came to listen to us and took the chance to socialize with us. Then banners and posters were put up in all the Nordic countries with our slogan for the year being bread for the workers, blood from the politicians. And when it comes to these posters and banners, I must highlight Denmark, where it was put up posters in no less than 30 different locations during the day. In both Trollhättan and Stockholm in Sweden, we counter-demonstrated against the Social Democrats' 1st of May demonstrations. And in the cities of Växjö and then Stockholm again, we participated in their gatherings, but with our own placards. So in some places we counter-demonstrated them, and in some places we participated in their demonstrations. However, as said, with our own placards, and that was probably not the ones they would have chosen themselves. In Sweden's capital, our activists joined the train with messages such as social democracy is treason to the people. And this without being discovered, walking around stating that the ones in the train are traitors. In Växjö, it was more focus on trolling, even more, I would say. And there, among other things, a quote from the former Social Democratic leader Mona Sahlin stating that Muhammed should get the job before the Swedes was used. So she actually said this when she was the leader of the Social Democratic Party, that she thought it was a good idea that Muhammed should always get the job before ordinary Swedes. So this quote was used on a placard. And despite the fact that this is a quote from their own former leader, the poster attracted a lot of attention and anger in the Social Democratic demonstration, and they also called the police to the place. And can you get the fantastic humor when one of our activists is actually dragged away by the police from a Social Democratic demonstration for carrying a placard with a quote from one of their own leaders? This is extremely entertaining indeed, and a hugely successful trolling.
He was actually on the stage where they, the Social Democrats were going to speak.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was really funny. Then, in Iceland, except for putting up banners and posters in Iceland, also a social event was arranged during the afternoon on May the 1st, to which other outside Icelandic nationalists were invited, with the aim of strengthening the community ties in the wider national movement at the country. And this has not been done so many times in Iceland. It's nice to see that you also go for these more social activities and also inviting non-members to the gathering. Then Sinni Mustalikke in Finland, I must mention as well. They are not a part of the Nordic Resistance Movement, but it is an organization we openly support and are fond of. So I will also report that they held a demonstration through the city of Tampere during the day, which also went well. It was little bit less participations than they would have hoped for, but also this was directly after a long and very intensive election campaign. So I guess many of their members and supporters, they were like hangover from the election activism. But still, they were many enough to do it well, and there was no problems at all. They gave several speeches from their various representatives in Tampere. Last and perhaps least concerning, 1st of May, but still big enough to mention, a public banner campaign was also carried out in Stockholm, which received an unusual numbers of thumbs up and also hails from the cars. And it was with the banner text, "Social democracy is treason to the people." They have done these kind of banner activity many times, but they have never ever got so many much positive feedback from the people as when they said social democracy is treason to the people. So Sweden's largest party, the Social Democrats, they are obviously not very popular among the white majority in the country who do not vote for them anymore. Public banner actions where we stood across roads with flags and sound messages, we have also carried out as usual on several other occasions. One that stands out is in the city of Växjö in southern Sweden, where a police officer physically assaulted one of our activists and tried to rip the flag from his hand. The police quickly discovered that he was facing his superior and was forced to back off, whereupon he instead began to finger his gun. And this, running against our members, starting to fight against them, trying to steal their flag, starting to finger his gun, for a banner over a road in southern Sweden with the text "Make a revolutionary choice" and our internet address, So no illegal act have even been committed, not even a hate crime. However, the police calmed down eventually and also apologized several times for his behavior. And of course, we are used to seeing the cops behave very bad against us on various occasions, but this was extreme also for us. This bad, they usually do not behave. We also used banners when we learned that the American nationalist Rob Rondo had been arrested on suspicion of sedition against the American state by organizing nationalists around the country. So in several locations in Sweden, Norway, and Iceland, the message "Break the shackles of democracy, free Rob Rondo" was highlighted. In addition to banners, also through tin signs that were screwed up in Norway. The murdered nationalist, Tommy Lind, was also honored with banners on the anniversary of his death. With more social activities, we also celebrated the Avatar's birthday. We celebrated the martyr Gösta Hallberg Kula's death anniversary and the woman Karin Göring and female goddess Ostara in connection with the Easter celebration when spring was welcomed. Then there are three actions left during this eventful period that I think deserve attention here. The first one of them being a nationwide waste campaign in Denmark, where nature was cleaned and then the rubbish was handed over to those responsible for the destruction of Denmark, the politicians. Both outside municipal buildings and also at the private residence of Danish traitor politicians. We have done this kind of activity before in the past, both in Denmark and in Sweden. But I really think it is great, and I wish that we will do it more in the future. Because cleaning nature is indeed practiced National Socialism, but it can seem a little populist or reactionary. And then it really becomes the icing of the cake when you combine it with a little revolutionary dumping of the shit at the home of shitty politicians. So, thumbs up, Denmark. I really like this one. We have actually talked several times before in Leadership Perspective about raggare. That could be said to be white, motor-interested, rockabilly Swedish men, often, who often sympathize with us. And during the period, we have participated to spread our message to these raggare, but also to other Swedes, at a large motor fair in the city of Jönköping, and then also at a cruising in Vetlanda. Finally then, we have also celebrated European Union Day on 9th of May. Our activists in the southern Swedish city of Nässjö, they burned an EU flag in the central square and also gave a spontaneous speech calling on the residents to fight for an exit from the globalist pact, and that instead the Nordic countries must unite into one free national socialist nation. So yeah, that was it. The biggest and most important events since last time.
Yeah, and a lot has happened since the last period.
Absolutely.
Very good. Yeah, we're moving on to the ideological, tactical, philosophical question. We are fathers of many children, both you and I, Lindberg. And I know that this is something that impressed many, that we still prioritize the struggle and also have so much time and energy to spend on it, despite the ordinary life puzzle that applies to a working family man. I thought we should talk a little bit about children, family, and parenting, but also about children in the struggle and about children in the new Nordic region after National Socialism has won. So to begin with, can you present your family situation and how your life looks in relation to the family and the struggle?
Yes, I have 4 children so far, from 1.5 years old to 17 years old. However, it is not with one and the same mother, and unfortunately, I only live with my youngest boy. But of course, I have regular contact and shared custody of all my children. And I think that my life in terms of family and such is actually fairly normal, I would say. It is probably the material conditions that are somewhat worse than in other families, due to the fact that I have chosen the path of struggle so clearly and publicly. I have had to renounce most of my professional career, and therefore we do not go abroad or on other expensive family activities very often. But of course, do the children have food on the table and whole and clean clothes, which of course, together with love and a healthy upbringing, is even more important. And when it comes to my youngest boy, I would like to say that I have been a very present father, as I was lucky enough to manage my lack of work and my struggle work in such a way that I still have had quite a lot of time with him. Above all, ever since he was only a couple of weeks old, we have taken forest walks together. Not so long when he was a couple of weeks old, but longer and longer the older he got. Or yeah, probably mostly me who has done the walking. But he has been sitting in a carrier on me, and we actually did this last time earlier today in the nice pre-summer heat. All in all, there's a lot of hours at this point that we have spent together in the Swedish woods, something that I really hope will have a positive impact on him later in life. And when it comes to the struggle, all my children have been allowed to come along from time to time when it was suitable to meet and play with other children of nationally minded men and women. But otherwise, they have not been involved in the struggle in that sense. I also want to mention that I have a fantastic National Socialist woman by my side, and that is something that clearly makes life easier in many ways, and especially when it comes to combining family and our common struggle. So, yeah, that was roughly the answer to that question, I think. But as you yourself, and as you mentioned, also have a large family, Veidland, bigger than mine, perhaps it could be interesting for our listeners if you could answer the same question yourself.
Yeah, sure. I have 8 children from age 2 to 17. And I totally agree with you that it is important. It has been to me anyway, important that the mother, I have the same mother to all children. The mother is involved. She is a member in the movement. Her name is Paulina Forslund. And that makes it easier for me to be active, because we are in sync what we want. So she gives me a lot of time, and she takes a lot of responsibility for the children. Yeah, so that's a secret, actually, to make it work and to combine all this. That you should have a, if you are a man, you should have a very good woman. And I think it's good if she's involved, that she knows our ideology and is a member of your organization.
So just an easy thing like that.
It's a lot more, but of course, if she weren't a member and or like ordinary woman, I've still been in the struggle, but maybe I haven't been so active that I am today.
No, I meant just that for many people, it is probably sounds like a dream or something for many men to have a woman involved in the struggle and being a member and everything. So not so easy to get your hands on. But we will talk a little bit about more about it later, I know. But
yeah, and I know some men in the struggle doesn't want their women involved at all. But I strongly disagree with that, actually. But if it works for you, yeah, fine. But yeah. But we're going to that subject in a moment.
Yes.
But what do you think about nationalists who do not want to bring children at all into this world? Or for that matter, nationalists who stop being active when they have children to instead focus on the family?
I understand, of course, that you can think this way when you see how bad it looks in society today with cultural Marxist indoctrination, pedophiles, huge rising immigrant crime, and so on. But at the same time, it is clearly at least one of the real meanings of life to have children, so that your blood and so that yourself can live on through them. It is also a fact that if our race is to survive, we must bring more white children into the world. If we preach this to other people, we must of course also try to lead by example. The fight will not be won, and the future will not improve by itself. It takes hard work and struggle. And for that, it takes fighters. Not only here and now, but also in the next generation. All of us who have the opportunity must do our part to breed these fighters. Of course, you can then also turn it the other way around. Because you've had a child, of course, it becomes even more important that you actively take up the fight yourself. Otherwise, you brought your children into the world entirely for selfish reasons. For their sake, it is your damn duty to do everything in your power to give them the best conditions possible. And perhaps it is impossible for us to win the fight in our generation. But if we do not do everything we can to prepare the struggle for the next generation, they will not be able to win either. Without your fight today, you only postpone the necessary and place an even greater responsibility on your offspring. What a cowardly excuse of a man are you to let your children fight for you? Then, of course, we also have the moral aspect. Regardless of whether we succeed or even fail, how can you look your own children in the eyes without being ashamed if you don't know that you at least did everything you could in the fight for us to win? I would say it's close to child abuse to give birth to new life, but then you don't give a shit about the fight for their future. My kids, they may not get the latest smartphone and brand new expensive designer clothes or whatever, but at least they have a father they can be proud of. One that has given his entire life to create a better and safer future for them. Despite the fact that the world outside is on fire, as we have not managed to achieve success for our cause. In any case, I sleep well at night, knowing that I have done and am doing everything I can.
Yes, and there are also some men who would like to have children, but who in the modern feminized world find it difficult to meet the right woman to start a family with. Do you have any tips for this?
I have one hugely important tip to start out with. Who dares wins. Take what you want. The perfect woman won't jump into your arms while you're sitting at home playing Counter-Strike or chatting on Telegram. No, instead, decide who you want and then actively fight to get her. And if you fail, just try the next one. But the important thing here is that if you don't even try, you will, of course, never win either. That's one thing for sure. To win, you must dare. No victory without a fight. Furthermore, I think it is important not to be too picky when it comes to either appearance or opinions and lifestyle. Of course, I'm not saying that you should start a family with the first best swamp troll in your local Antifa chapter. But what I am looking for is rather that you must, of course, try to be able to look at yourself fairly objectively in the mirror and understand that if you're not really rich or have some other amazing external advantages, you will at best be able to get a woman who looks a little better than yourself. So if you look okay, but no more, then of course you cannot demand that you must have the most beautiful woman in town either. And as far as opinions and lifestyle are concerned, my experience is that the woman will very much adapt and follow you if you set a good example and lead her. If you are looking for a woman who already lives a completely natural life and embraces National Socialism, you will most likely die single, as most of these women are already occupied. So instead, choose a cute and nice but ordinary girl next door. Make up your mind to get her and then fight for it. And if you fail, try the next one. That's my advice to you.
Yeah, I think it's important to, like you said, don't have this standard that very few women can live up to in this society. My experience is that many modern feminist women actually change their minds when they get pregnant.
Yes.
Then they want to live a natural life. And as you said, you can also influence them, take control in your relationship.
Absolutely.
So just don't sit at home playing games and hate women because of what the society have brainwashed them to. But women,
Yeah, fight for her. Get out there and do
fight for
something.
it. Yes. How do you come out to your girlfriend as a National Socialist?
I believe in honesty from the start, and above all, in not making a big deal out of it. I mean, there is nothing wrong, shameful, or strange about being a National Socialist. It is completely normal. It is the most natural thing in the world. Let it appear exactly that way. Don't give a damn about the media or Hollywood, what they say about being a National Socialist, but look into what it is, the most natural sound thing in the world, and just let her know it that way. So instead of making it out to be this really big thing that you have to talk to her about, some sort of crucial secret you're carrying in the dark, come to the date wearing a nationalist t-shirt, or roll up your sleeves on your shirt and show off your nationalist tattoos, or start talking about race and Jews in a completely natural way in the conversation when it suits. my personal experience, at least, is that most women will not hold anything against you if you appear to be a good and stable man otherwise.
Yes. Back to your own family then. How aware are your children of the struggle and natural socialism?
My oldest son, who will soon be an adult, I would say is very knowledgeable. And my youngest, who is not even 2 years old yet, of course, has no idea. I have never in any way tried to brainwash my children somehow, but at the same time, I have also never been ashamed or withheld things unnecessarily. The books with Hitler have always been open on the bookshelf. I have always listened mainly to nationally minded music, also in their presence. The discussions when comrades visited have not been adapted so that they will not hear, and so on. And then with the older children, I have also always answered 100% honestly when they themselves came up with questions and thoughts, or when they have repeated some propaganda lie they got from somewhere. So I never said they had to think like me or something like that, but at least I gave them my view on things as well. I did not brainwash them, but also I did not let the establishment's attempt to brainwash them go completely unchallenged. And I hope that if they don't choose the path of the struggle themselves when they are adults, they will at least understand and respect that I have chosen to do so.
Yes, the Nordic Resistance Movement has, as I have talked about in a previous episode, adapted its organization somewhat to be able to include entire families and children. Would you like to tell us a little more about this and why it's important?
Well, 10 to 15 years ago, it was quite common for activists to leave the organization when they had children. And this often because the fight was fierce and quite manly, and it was pretty much impossible to bring a wife and children to these activities. It doesn't always work out to take women and children out on the streets in the red neighborhoods or in immigrant-dense areas where the risk of conflict is high. And maybe not either if you sleep outside in minus 35 degrees or if you have to walk many miles with heavy packing in rough terrain and or whatever it might be. The men were therefore often forced at this time, more or less, to choose between the struggle or the family. But if we are to really be able to create change, we must, of course, be able to make use of the potential of all people, regardless of where they are in life. It would, for example, be completely impossible to bring about a total revolution with only teenagers involved, because they lack decisive life experience, knowledge, and understanding for life and the world at large. So to remedy this, we try to have a lot of social activities and make sure there is something for the children to do at our meetings and get-togethers. Either that the children can do something entirely their own together, or that they can take part in adapted versions of what we adults do. If, for example, we work out, the children can often participate based on their conditions. If there are more serious speeches and meetings, perhaps a room and an adult can be spared to sit and draw, cut and glue with the children, etc. If we can also get the children and the wife to take part in the struggle and get them to feel involved, then at best it can lead to the wife also becoming a member and children being recruited when they get older. And at the very least, in any case, lead to the husband remaining in the struggle even when he gets older and has a family. This creates respect and understanding in the family so that the man can also participate in the more manly activities when necessary without the family feeling left out. So we have not in any way skipped these fierce and manly activities. We have not lowered the numbers of them. We have just added on these family activities as well because of the reasons I mentioned.
That is very good. How have you dealt with the cultural Marxist propaganda at school, racial slurs and anti-whiteness that your children have come into contact with over the years?
To begin with, it might be good to mention to our international listeners that we have compulsory schooling in Sweden and that homeschooling is prohibited. You must therefore, by law, send your children to the state school, despite the so-called democratic values and regardless of how much propaganda they spew there. Having said that, I have, and as I also touched on earlier, at least tried to involve myself in my children's schooling. I asked them how they enjoyed school and what they have learned. If they brought up something really crazy, like Hitler being the meanest man in the world, or boys can like boys as much as they like girls, or whatever it might be, I have given my take on that subject too. Not forced them to follow my view, but at least given my view of it all as well, often with very logical arguments. Do you really think your father would have liked Hitler if he was as mean as your teacher said? If boys like boys, there can be no children, because it takes a boy and a girl to create new children. Don't you think that most people want children sometime in the future when they're adults? And something like that, something similar. But just being logical and given my side of the whole thing. Then I also don't think you should be afraid to confront the teachers and dare to question them when they have said something over the top crazy. Because often the teachers, they never receive any countermeasures. And they go on old ruts and completely according to the cultural Marxist study plan. But maybe it's enough for them to be questioned once. And for the rest of their career, they will teach in at least a slightly different and better way. Then you have not only created better conditions for your own children through your questioning, but also for hundreds, maybe even thousands of other children, which of course would be amazing. When it comes to racial strangers, then, we have more and more of them in Sweden, sadly. I rather believe in encouraging other friends than saying something bad about the racial strangers. I mean, all parents, regardless of political views, they try to control their children's interactions somewhat. There is really nothing strange about that, I think. But I believe more in saying, you know, Peter, he's so very kind and funny, than saying, you know, Muhammad, he's a terrible, mean and boring. On the one hand, your child can actually end up in trouble otherwise. And on the other hand, I mean, 7-year-old Muhammad, he does not deserve to be badly treated unnecessarily just because his parents choose to go to the Nordics. It is like not really his fault. My children, and I because of that, have otherwise mostly ended up in conflict with the school personnel because my children fought back when they were exposed to something. I have taught all my children since they were quite young that you should always fight back. Only run when you absolutely have to, and never ever tell on others. The school thinks just the opposite. They think that you should never fight back, that you should always run, and that you should always be a little snitch. And these completely different views, they have thus led to conflicts with school staff, where I have 100% stood up for my children when they fought back at school because they refused to take any shit.
Yes. Would you like to give some examples of how it will be different to be a child in the new Nordic region that we have liberated compared to how it is today?
Yes, the first and most important thing is that they will be able to be significantly safer and more harmonious in our Nordic nation. Namely, there won't be any gangs of immigrants humiliating, robbing or raping them. Furthermore, we will also create an inhospitable climate for pedophiles, among other things, by making the process short for those convicted of serious crime. With a national socialist value base in the school that has replaced the so-called democratic one, the children will also be in significantly better contact with nature and appreciate forest, mountains, seas, and animal life. We will also have more sports in school and really make sure to support families with children financially and through a good selection to be able to be active in various associations that promote the Folkgemeinschaft or the public health. So the children in our nation are guaranteed to be both stronger, healthier and more united with each other than they are today. This will further be promoted by the fact that they will get more healthy food and by the fact that the vast majority of them will grow up in a more natural family where the mother is at home with the children until they start school. They will also avoid other poisons to a much greater extent, regardless of whatever it is, environmental toxins, narcotics, pornography or cultural Marxist indoctrination. Then we will also try to make use of the unique potential of all boys and girls in a completely different way by, for example, having class divisions according to skill level at a relatively early age. In this way, those who have a little more difficult in school can be guaranteed the resources and help they need to still manage their schooling in the best possible ways. And those who have the potential to become real geniuses, they are also being given the space they need to become so without being held back by the more ordinary children. They will therefore all be given better conditions to become the best they can be. Nordic children should be as teeth. White, straight, and strong. And that's exactly how they will be in our Nordic National Socialist nation.
Yeah, and the opposite is what we have today. They are creating weak minds and people that are dependent on the system.
Yes, and also the opposite to white, sadly enough.
Yeah. And what should listeners do if they want to help realize this vision?
Join or at least support your local National Socialist organization and be sure to have many white children. It may sound harsh, but the reality is that there are no shortcuts. Fight and breed for the 14 words.
And with that, we end this episode. And questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes of Leadership Perspective can be sent to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social media and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. You can read more on our webpage, nordicresistancemovement.org. Next episode will hopefully be available the 12th of July. However, with this being in the middle of summer, when there is a lot of other things going on, we cannot guarantee anything, but we will try to be back at the 12th of July.
Yes, it's very hectic during the summers, both with family, as we have discussed today, but also with it's the most active period of the year often. So maybe we cannot prioritize radio, but hopefully.
Yes, we will see you when we see you.
Absolutely.
Take care and bye.
Goodbye.